Test 8.
Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
11. I have never seen such a wonderful movie. I hope you enjoyed it as I did.
I must admit that I felt drowsy during the 2 hours.
Question. How did the man feel about the movie?
Twelve. Could you tell me the timetable of the school bus?
Well, the bus leaves here for school every 2 hours from 6 o'clock a.m., but on Saturdays it starts half an hour later.
Question. When does the bus leave on Saturdays?
Thirteen. I had prepared dinner for 6 people before Mary called and said that she couldn't make it.
That's all right. I am just going to tell you I have invited John.
Question. How many people are coming to the dinner? 14. This is too much. I have been waiting for my meal for more than half an hour.
I know. But you see, the restaurant is full, and we're short-handed today.
Question. How does the woman feel? 15. I'd like to make an appointment with Professor Winston tomorrow.
I'm sorry. Professor Winston went on a 1-week vacation in Hong Kong. He'll probably be back next weekend.
Question. Where is Professor Winston now?
16. You call Mary a dreamer, but I think she has many good ideas.
Good ideas are only useful if you can make something out of them.
Question. Why does the woman think Mary is a dreamer? 17. Tom must be joking when he said he planned to sell his shop to go to university.
Don't be sure. I don't know how many times he's told me that he wishes to go to university.
Question. What does the woman mean? 18. Of the 2 cars we have seen, which one do you think fits our needs better, the first one or the second one?
The second one. It seems very expensive, but in the long run it will save us a lot of money.
Question. What does the woman say about the reason for her choice?
2 you'll hear 2 long conversations. Conversation 1. Hey, Steve, got any plans for tonight?
Hi, Jane. No, I don't think so. Why? Got any suggestions?
In fact, I do. I just got 2 tickets to the opening of the exhibition of the reprints by Julia Margaret Cameron. I would have mentioned it earlier, but I was on the waiting list for these tickets, and I wasn't sure I'd even get them.
An exhibition, huh? I like such things, but I don't know who Julia...
Margaret Cameron! She was a photographer in the 1800s. She is interesting to art historians in general, and students of photography in particular, because she, how should I say, changed the aesthetics for photography.
What do you mean?
Well, her specialty was portraits, and instead of just making a factual record of details like most photographers did, you know, just capturing what a person looked like in a dispassionate sort of way, she, like a portrait painter, was interested in capturing her subject's personality.
Interesting. How did she do that?
She invented a number of techniques that affect the picture. Like one of those things she did was blur images slightly by using a soft focus on the subject. That's pretty common now.
Yeah, seems that way. Who did she photograph?
Famous people of her day. Alfred Lord Tennyson, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Charles Darwin. I don't know who else. We'll see at the exhibition.
You really piqued my curiosity. I'm going to enjoy this. Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard. 19. What is the conversation mainly about? What did Julia Margaret Cameron emphasize in her portraits? According to the conversation, what unique photographic technique did Julia Margaret Cameron use?
22.
What did the man decide at last?
2. Hey, Jim, what a coincidence. Long time no see.
Yeah, me too. Hey, just as old friends, I got to tell you. You don't look that well. Are you sick or something?
Well, not really. It's the same old story of the life of an overworked undergraduate student. I am up to my neck on this project. I am working on a project that has to be done by the end of the month.
Can't you speak to your professor about that? Maybe he would allow an extension, and you will then have some breathing space.
Fat chance. My professor is one of those workaholic types, and he expects everyone that works with him has to be the same way. You know, sometimes he sleeps 4 hours a night, but can still keep going during the day.
Wow. Sounds like your professor is really nuts. You know, I don't mind working hard, but not to the point of killing myself. Hope you can get your project done without any hitches.
What about you? I heard the faculty is building another building on campus. A big project, it seems, by the looks of things, and nearly completed, I think.
Well, not quite there yet. They still have not decided whether they should move there or not. The dean wants me to mark papers and do some administration work for them. I have to make a decision by the end of this week.
That is a tough decision, isn't it? I would jump on the offer if I had one. To work with some of those academic types must be interesting.
Sure it is. I would not think twice if I didn't have such a heavy load this semester. Besides, my girlfriend isn't happy about my always spending time at school.
I can understand how your girlfriend feels. Maybe you can ask for a light load. Perhaps you should request to work only on certain days.
That's true. Then I wouldn't have to work under a workaholic professor anymore.
Hey, Jim, do you think I have any chance of getting some work there?
Are you serious about working there? I thought you were joking.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. 23.
What do the two people mainly talk about?
24. What decision does the man need to make?
25. What does the woman imply about her work intentions?
2. Directions. In this section, you will hear 3 short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Passage 1. In the U.S., we have free compulsory public education for all children from grade 1 to grade 12. Children must stay in school through grade 12, or at least until they are 16. Public schooling is truly free. No book fees, no music fees, no athletic fees. Books are handed out at the beginning of the school year and must be returned at the end. Most schools supply paper, pencils, erasers, calculators, computers, art supplies, and musical instruments. I have been a primary school teacher for over 30 years. I teach English in Cambridge, Massachusetts, to pupils who are members of racial minorities. Currently, I work with Haitian immigrant children who do not speak English when they enter school. Their families come from a country where violence is all too common. Haitian schools are often closed. Indeed, in the past 10 years, there has not been a single complete school year. Grinding poverty results in a very low level of literacy. Parents seldom have funds for books, paper, or pencils. When the children of such families arrive in the U.S., they are woefully unprepared to compete with their middle-class age mates.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. 26. According to the passage, what is true about the compulsory public education in the U.S.? What's the speaker's profession? 28. According to the passage, why couldn't Haitian children speak English when they entered school?
2. From this lookout, we enjoy one of the most spectacular views of San Francisco. As you can see, the city rests on a series of hills varying in altitude from sea level to 938 feet. The first permanent settlement was made at this site in 1776. For 13 years, the village had fewer than 100 inhabitants. But in 1848, with the discovery of gold, the population grew to 10,000. The same year, the name was changed from Yerba Buena to San Francisco. By 1862, telegraph communications linked San Francisco with eastern cities, and by 1869, the first transcontinental railroad connected the Pacific coast with the Atlantic seaboard. Today, San Francisco has a population of almost 3 million. It is the financial center of the West and serves as the terminus for trans-Pacific steamship lines and air traffic. The port of San Francisco, which is almost 18 miles long with 42 piers, handles between 5 and 6 million tons of cargo annually. And now, if you will look to your right, you should just be able to see the east section of the Golden Gate Bridge. The bridge, which is more than 1 mile long, spans the harbor from San Francisco to Marin County and the Redwood Highway. It was completed in 1937 at a cost of $32 million and is still one of the largest suspension bridges in the world. Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. 29. According to the tour guide, what happened in 1848? 30. What is the population of San Francisco today? 31. How much did it cost to complete the construction of the Golden Gate Bridge?
3. There are three groups of English learners: beginners, intermediate learners, and learners of special English. Beginners need to learn the basics of English. Students who have reached an intermediate level benefit from learning general English skills. But what about students who want to learn specialist English for their work or professional life? Most students who fit into this third group have a clear idea about what they want to learn. A bank clerk, for example, wants to use this specialist vocabulary and technical terms of finance. But for teachers, deciding how to teach specialist English is not always so easy. For a start, the variety is enormous. Every field from airline pilots to secretaries has its own vocabulary, and many teachers are exposed to working environments outside the classroom. These issues have influenced the way specialist English is taught in schools. This type of course is usually known as English for Specific Purposes, or ESP, and there are ESP courses for almost every area of professional and working life. In Britain, for example, there are courses which teach English for doctors, lawyers, reporters, travel agents, and people working in the hotel industry. By far, the most popular ESP courses are for business English. Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. 32. If you are a beginner in English study, what should you do at first? Which group of English learners has a clear idea about what they want to learn? 34. Which of the following sentences is true according to the passage? 35. In Britain, what are the most popular ESP courses for?
6. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage 3 times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the 2nd time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard, or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the 3rd time, you should check what you have written.
You can thrill to the sight of the world's ski champions sailing through the air or racing down mountain slopes. You can marvel at the skill and grace of expert ice skaters, swimmers, jumpers, gymnasts. You can watch our top athletes compete against the top athletes of other nations. All these you can do every 4 years, thanks to TV. Thus, you can have a front row seat at the modern Olympic Games. You can view the opening day ceremonies on color TV. Bright flags wave, bands play. The crowd roars its approval of the parade of athletes. Nation by nation, the colorful groups march by. Your heart beats fast with pride as you view the fine group headed by your own country's banner. A high point of ceremonies is the lighting of the Olympic flame. You may wonder why a runner carries a flaming torch to light the fire. That lighted torch came all the way from Olympia, Greece. It was relayed from hand to hand to the host country. The goal of Olympic athletes is expressed in their motto, "Swifter, higher, and stronger." By undergoing the stress and strain of tough competition, they grow in strength, endurance, and discipline. They learn to respect and to cooperate with people from many nations. Each Olympic year, their creed reminds them that the most important thing in the games is not winning, but taking part. The oath they take binds them to abide by the rules of the Olympic Games, in the true spirit of sportsmanship, for the glory of sport, and the honor of our country. You can thrill to the sight of the world's ski champions sailing through the air or racing down mountain slopes. You can marvel at the skill and grace of expert ice skaters, swimmers, jumpers, gymnasts. You can watch our top athletes compete against the top athletes of other nations. All these you can do every 4 years, thanks to TV. Thus, you can have a front row seat at the modern Olympic Games. You can view the opening day ceremonies on color TV. Bright flags wave, bands play. The crowd roars its approval of the parade of athletes. Nation by nation, the colorful groups march by. Your heart beats fast with pride as you view the fine group headed by your own country's banner. A high point of ceremonies is the lighting of the Olympic flame. You may wonder why a runner carries a flaming torch to light the fire. That lighted torch came all the way from Olympia, Greece. It was relayed from hand to hand to the host country. The goal of Olympic athletes is expressed in their motto, swifter, higher, and stronger. By undergoing the stress and strain of tough competition, they grow in strength, endurance, and discipline. They learn to respect and to cooperate with people from many nations. Each Olympic year, their creed reminds them that the most important thing in the games is not winning, but taking part. The oath they take binds them to abide by the rules of the Olympic Games, in the true spirit of sportsmanship, for the glory of sport and the honor of our country. You can thrill to the sight of the world's ski champions sailing through the air or racing down mountain slopes. You can marvel at the skill and grace of expert ice skaters, swimmers, jumpers, gymnasts. You can watch our top athletes compete against the top athletes of other nations. All these you can do every 4 years, thanks to TV. Thus, you can have a front row seat at the modern Olympic Games. You can view the opening day ceremonies on color TV. Bright flags wave, bands play. The crowd roars its approval of the parade of athletes. Nation by nation, the colorful groups march by. Your heart beats fast with pride as you view the fine group headed by your own country's banner. A high point of ceremonies is the lighting of the Olympic flame. You may wonder why a runner carries a flaming torch to light the fire. That lighted torch came all the way from Olympia, Greece. It was relayed from hand to hand to the host country. The goal of Olympic athletes is expressed in their motto, swifter, higher, and stronger. By undergoing the stress and strain of tough competition, they grow in strength, endurance, and discipline. They learn to respect and to cooperate with people from many nations. Each Olympic year, their creed reminds them that the most important thing in the games is not winning, but taking part. The oath they take binds them to abide by the rules of the Olympic Games. In the true spirit of sportsmanship, for the glory of sport and the honor of our country. Mm-hmm.